Always Record, episode 119.
When you sleep, where do your fingers go? What do your fingers know? What do your fingers show? Where do your fingers go? Yeah.
But I'm here.
Are you a sickly person? Do you get sick often, or is it once in a blue?
No. It was a combination of, it was too many nights up all night, and freaking Beltane was the topper. So we do like a annual party in the woods. That's I think the 10th year was this year. So my friends set up a sound system up on a hill in the woods, and we have fun all night, have big bonfires and stuff. So I brought my art out to it and danced a bunch, and it was cool. But I was up for like 40 something hours, and it just didn't end.
Gee.
And being up.
Oh, yeah. That's a long time.
I've been up for longer than that. Stretches. What did I get? I think 130 hours. Was that?
Isn't
yeah,
it?
I did 130 hours last year at one point. I mean, I figured it out. It's fucked up.
I think there's something, there's speculation that once you get close to something like 7 days, I'm forgetting the exact number and I don't want to say I know, but it starts getting dangerous.
Oh yeah, like, you get totally delirious.
Pretty.
It starts to be like, the truest thing in media that I've seen to it is actually Fight Club. When it's like the level of like delusion, like you, it's not like, you know, with psychedelics or whatever, if you hallucinate, shit gets wobbly. You know, you get this visionary shit or whatever. But this is like to the point where you're literally talking to people who aren't there, like the fucking machinist or something, you know? Like they represent that well. It's like there's the line between reality and like your ability to project, like because you start dreaming while awake, I guess, is essentially what's happening. But how, you know, vividly clear it can be is pretty ridiculous, you know?
Okay, well, let's say that. Okay, I think we've lost Kevin for now, but
let's see what happens.
Give it a second.
Yeah,
you're back, Kevin.
Yeah,
guess who's back.
So,
did I disconnect?
In those there? Really, yeah.
Okay.
Or it said call dropped, but you were still a vestigial part of the call. You were just blinking in and out.
Huh.
But my question is, or my curiosity is. Let's say you are in one of those states of mind,
mm-hmm.
or altered states of consciousness. Is there still room for, like, objective, veridical, something from the outside of you to intervene in your state? Because I would agree that most of it probably is just a breaking down of physiology, and you're seeing all sorts of stuff that's not there, or whatever. Like, hallucinations are...
Yeah, well, when
a lot of times they're pathological, but I think sometimes they're not pathological. Sometimes I think it's actually tapping into the unconscious in a curious way, and it's just being projected in a curious way, or it's tapping into something,
right,
but you get, quote unquote, objective outside yourself.
Certain kind of delirium. So, like, when that first starts to show up, so it's a derangement. So, like, if it gets to a certain degree, like, if you go long enough without sleeping, for example, you know, you start to. You know, first the speech will be really like not linear, and then, you know, there's a whole kind of weird processing that goes on. But I guess, you know, I've experienced like going beyond that where it's like I've been up for so long, but I'm like so clear. It's like with a fast, you know, like when you haven't eaten for so many days. And it's like the first 3 days can be really challenging, especially that third day. But sometimes fourth or fifth day, you get like this surge of energy and you just start like cleaning shit and doing shit. Well, that'll happen with insomnia. But it's like it's not the same as like with fasting where it's just all good. Like in terms of your consciousness, like you can start, you know, relating to things that just aren't fucking there. And, you know, I mean, they're, for all intents and purposes, they're there for you, but they're not there for other people. It's really weird.
Yeah, I think the longest I was up for was three nights, and I started to like really get weird on the third night. And it definitely reminded me, like you said, of fasting and of like really kind of speedy consciousness. Like there was another time where I basically took a bunch of Dramamine to trip when I was like 17, like motion sickness stuff. Mm-hmm. And that stuff is really crazy. And I was out of my mind for a full day, like absolutely delirious. And like the sky was like doing really crazy stuff with my heartbeat, where like I could see my heartbeat in the sky, like pounding and stuff. But the weirdest thing about it was that at the end of the night, like there was so much going on, and I had actually experienced like spells of terror that lasted for like long periods of time. It was really intense. And but by the end of it, I felt like I was just like, I had become like just like totally perception, and I no longer could like, it was like kind of ego death, kind of like total loss of any self concept and stuff. And that was like a long night where I couldn't sleep, and I like slowly came out of that state. And that was just like a really, it definitely felt like some kind of shamanic other like place in consciousness that I've rarely ever gone and probably will rarely ever go again. But it was definitely a very, very strange, speedy experience with lots of kind of unconscious like experiences where I would be like hallucinating that I was at a totally different place, having different conversations that weren't going on, you know. I don't even know where that stuff was coming from even, but yeah, just that just reminds me of that night. That was a really strange experience.
You can get these winds that are just unbelievable right when you think you're just fucking done, like you're like couldn't possibly, you know, like it's inconceivable, you know. I don't know, I probably on this show I told the Burning Man story at some point about my Don't Stop Believing story. Did I ever tell that to you guys?
I don't think I've heard it.
I think so, but before you get into it, just let me comment real quick that on the concept of time speeding up or changing or whatever, this isn't a perfect analogy, and I'm not saying this is what's going on, but there's a concept in complexity theory that time has a relationship to entropy production, and time might be nonlinear in these sorts of nonlinear self-organizing processes where entropy is getting exported. And if you really think of time, I mean, if you want to think of it as, okay, there is no time, it's just a present. All we're really watching is entropy production or change or cyclings going on, and that's it. And so as complexity increases, and you could say that a psychedelic state is extremely complex as far as like what's going on in your neurology or whatever, it's only natural that time would either take on a speedy quality, like you're saying, or just be weird period, because really time, we don't know what it is yet. And
well, time, they say, as far as Einstein would say, it's the fourth dimension of space, which is the third dimension, right? But that there are lines in the sand, you know.
Well, as far as physics is concerned, it's like time is reversible, and the laws of physics work good both forward and backwards. But then there's laws of thermodynamics, which is everyday life, that don't work like that at all. There's no thermodynamic laws that are reversible. So there's a question of like how time factors into these experiences. And there's no, I don't know. It's, that's why, yeah, psychedelic states can make you, gives you that real experience to draw from. Be like, okay, well, there's these sorts of Newtonian existence, which is everyday existence, and then these like quantum or relativistic states of mind that let you feel the extremes and see the extremes of like atomic processes or cosmological processes. Because that's one of the oldest adages is like the universe is in man. So you have the experience of everything inside you, really. And it's just showing you that, even like something subtle like time. But anyway, if you want to go about your retelling of that experience.
It was basically, it was just an example where I was as done as I could possibly be after well over like, you know, three days with no sleep at Burning Man, and then being in the middle of the playa and freezing cold, like by myself, just fucking done. And then these people like rolled up on an art car that was like a stage, and there was a bunch of like wackadoo crazy instruments or whatever, like brass instruments and weird things. And they were like, they were like trying to polka or whatever. And these other people, after a bit, come up from out of nowhere, from like another place, you know, and they like had their own weird instruments as well. There's a kind of like, almost like washboard kind of style or whatever you call it. What do you call those? I don't know what kind of band that's called.
Like the gypsy kind
of
vibe?
Well, I'm thinking of the fucking, what's the Otter Christmas thing from Jim Henson, where it's like the
jug band?
Yeah, the jug band. Jug band, man, shit. But yeah, these people, they're like, hey, you guys know how to polka? And they're like, we don't know how to polka. These people walking up, but they're like, but we really want to find someone who'll play Don't Stop Believing with us. And so they all get on the stage, these fucking random musicians, and they fucking, trying to remember the lyrics, and then something just happens where it just takes over. And before I know it, there's like all of these people walking up, and everyone's like singing Don't Stop Believing. And it was just like, I mean, I was like, I was so done, I was like, crying in the playa, like I was just delirious, fucked up, you know. And everyone was singing Don't Stop Believing. I just like joined in. I started shouting the lyrics, Don't Stop Believing. I didn't know like that I knew all the lyrics to Don't Stop Believing, but they were totally in there. And so it's like, this whole thing, and then we like would repeat verses and just keep it going, keep it going. Then after a bit, it just kind of like, okay, that's done, what's happened. And then I felt all charged up from the event, and I realized like it just completely shifted my state. To be in, like, have energy in the group, and like the group energetic, that's been the key. Like that, I've just ended up in situations where I'll show up at an event and I got my, like, especially lately, like I'll have my artwork and I want to set up all my artwork, which is can be a very big process, you know, and I'll set up like a gallery, and then I need to show the art to people and be there for that. And so I'll stay up all night talking to people and all this stuff. And then I have to work the event, and so I end up helping people with fucking parking and cars and all this shit, and the, you know, the moving speakers, doing all this shit. And then I want to dance and have a good time too. I don't want to like go to an event and not like sit down. So it's like with all of these things, I just don't sleep. And so say the event is fucking, you know, four days long, 5 days long. Oftentimes I might get fucking 3 to 6 hours in, but that's it. You know, it's fucking weird. That's what happens, and oftentimes totally sober, you know, for the most part.
Did you meet someone that knew Albert Hoffman at Burning Man, or did you meet that guy somewhere else?
I met him in Stanford. But no, he lived with Albert Hoffman in Switzerland for a number of years. They were close friends. He's, you know, maps and stuff.
You had mentioned in a past episode, like, even delving deeply into, say, materialism, which is just, you know, catalyzing chemicals to produce this LSD in this lab.
Yeah.
It's about as Western as you can get and materialistic as you can get. It still erupts into, you know, a spiritual sphere. It turns back onto itself or inverts itself. It's this one extreme bursting forth to the other. So I liked your analogy there.
Bob Hardy wrote that on the board at one point. He said, I think it was in the 70s, he said Western man was looking for a way to find God through materialism, and he found it with LSD, which I thought was kind of far out thing to say.
And I think that even, like, I'm finding a certain amount of utility in, like, you read Robert Anton Wilson or McKenna, and they have leanings towards, like, artificial intelligence and space travel and, like, the automatic mechanistic sides of man, but they co-opt it and develop it in such a way that it becomes spiritual. And it's really interesting how that's done. And because I think we're always looking for metaphors and what have you. And then we'll craft a metaphor or adopt a metaphor, and that'll put us into some sort of conflict or false dichotomy with the other side or something. And so I like the idea of just, I don't know, just seeing that, okay, everyone's saying, oh, let's transcend materialism, but it's like, well, maybe we just don't understand what material is yet. Maybe there is a deeply spiritual thing to it, and we're just confusing them as two separate things, or vice versa. It's like an interesting question. So, I don't know, I just like that idea that even, like, seeing yourself as a sort of technology or machine doesn't necessarily mean you're just, you know, totally nothing and there's no meaning to life, it's like you can still have that spiritual transformer type quality to you if you want it to be. It's like, I don't know. I like that concept. So that's been on my mind. And when you said that, that stayed with me ever since. I'm like, yeah, that's a really good analogy and a way to think about, I guess, if you're trying to recreate culture or co-op culture or work within a culture you don't necessarily agree with, it's like, how do you do that? And so, I don't know.
Were you guys already chatting?
Can you bring Kevin in? Yeah, I was going on a great rant. I had all these really smart things to say. And I guess it fucked up. So I hope it kept.
Oh, now you see how it feels. Now you see how it feels, right?
It only happens to me. It only happens to me. It's been happening recently.
So I'm sorry I'm late. I was trying to finish up some quick news. Were you guys in the middle of something?
No. You can go on your tangent. I want to hear it.
No, let's see if we can get. I'm just saying, like, were you guys. Did you have a direction already? Or what you've been doing is fighting with Skype?
It has been a tug of war with Skype. But as far as what we were chatting about, I think it was just like. You should go.
Okay, the deal is I'm not recording.
I'm still fucking recording.
Why'd you say you said you should go? Is that what you said?
No, I'm saying Alan's like, oh, I don't want to interrupt the flow of the conversation.
Oh, you're kicking Alan off the fucking call?
Fuck you guys. I'm not going to share any of my food.
Oh, no.
But I want to know all about some quick news. I'd rather know that than indulge my own.
No, it's actually thoughts. Not what I want to talk about.
Oh, good. Then we'll keep it on the down low.
Sync quick news. You'll see it when you see it.
Okay. All right. I'm fine with that.
No, I don't care. I don't give a shit. Anyway. Oh, I think Kevin's here.
But we were just talking about kind of like materialism and its relationship to spirituality. So like the LSD phenomenon and something crafted in a lab brings you into a super high transcendental state. So just something David had brought up in a past episode. And I chose to make that the launching point for my soapbox.
Well, that's not a bad sort of segue into something I wanted to bring up also. I think we can kind of bounce off each other. I mean, basically what I want to talk about is the sort of intersection of physicality and spirituality. Exactly that. All right, so if you will indulge me, I'd like to tell a really quick story and then obviously get everyone's take on it. But I was really glad I was going to get to see you guys tonight because it's something I wanted to throw out there.
There's nothing I can't edit, so we can just sit here in silence or gossip really hard about somebody.
So, yeah, speaking of gossip, that just reminded me, actually, that dude... What was his name? He was like from Connecticut, and he just like, so I saw some posts about him being like a white supremacist or something. Kyle something.
Kyle Hunt.
Yeah,
Kyle
Hunt. Yeah. Kyle Hunt. Yeah. So what's the deal with that dude? What, like, he like fell off the internets, it seemed, and then I just heard that. Do you guys know anything about his deal?
Oh, Alan can speak very eloquently on that.
Well, I mean, the last contact I had with him was when he threatened me with his Nazi brotherhood and told me if I didn't get on board with the white power train, they were going to run us all over on their quest to the top. Yeah, oh yeah, like that was like no joke. Like,
holy crap, what a fuck. That's
yeah,
crazy.
He said he's the reincarnation of Hitler or something, and...
Oh, so he's all had right, like a full-on mental breakdown. That's insane.
So you know what's really funny? I'm going to tell you right now my psychoanalysis of Kyle Kunt. All right, it's very easy. It's very very succinct.
Right.
Do you remember when he did a chapter for Sync Book Volume 1? It was the rainbow alphabet, right? And then he did that presentation in New York about the whole rainbow alphabet, right? That was his shtick,
by the way.
He was the he's the rainbow guy, right? He was the rainbow.
Right.
Now, can you picture the classic image of the prism, where you have the white light and the rainbow, like, you know, Dark Side of the Moon album cover.
Right.
Right? He literally, this is the, you know, the split in the mind, is one side is seeing all the rainbow, and the other side can only see white.
Right.
Right? So that's what, it's like, he was the rainbow guy, and then he became the white supremacist guy. But to me, it's still the same sort of, he's a prism. He's a little, you know, he's still got this same sort of lens, obviously skewed. I mean, you know, the dude's fucking fucked in the head, but you get what I'm saying? Like, there's that was a realization I had one day. I was like, oh, it's kind of the same thing in a weird sort of way.
There's definitely like a Jungian quality to that whole trip he's on, you know, definitely.
David might be back, let's see.
Yeah, so Art, you had no idea that he was on that. Yeah, he
No, I just saw a Facebook post that, like, I guess it was like, I don't even remember the context, but it was something about him and white supremacy, and I was just like, no way. And I never dug any deeper, but yeah, that's crazy. So is he still like, is he like not in a mental institution yet? Is he still like running around like spouting garbage, or?
I believe he was still running around spouting garbage. Yeah.
Wow.
He was interviewed for like Salon or something.
Yeah, he made that dude made national headlines.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the SyncBook website. Oh my God! This is how I found out about it. Was one day I start getting an insane amount of traffic to the SyncBook website, right? And I'm like, crazy. What the fuck's going on here? And I look at the traffic. And it's all these search terms of Kyle Hunt. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Everybody knows that that's the subliminal of the black and white books, too.
What's the subliminal?
The subliminal is that his racism, man. It's all about race. The whole thing is about race, obviously.
Oh, the black and white books. Oh, right, right, right. Yeah, I actually, I was fermenting a race war with, it was a magical talisman.
Wanted a zebra war. Figured,
right.
You know, yeah, that's what those, you know, Chinese are up to with the yin and the yang. It was all trying to create a race war.
That's right.
But
it's not about peace.
Yeah, but that's how I found out the first time. I was like, "What the fuck is this?"
So how did he make headlines? What did he do to make the headlines?
He did. He tried to. I don't know how successful he was. I doubt he got a million people. But spearheaded the Million White Man March instead of like Million Man March.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I mean, insane.
Like five other people showed up. It was very small.
Good, that's, good.
It was the five white people march.
Essentially, oh,
man. I'm kind of bummed that I've missed out on trolling this guy throughout this whole thing. I might have to troll him a little bit.
It's not worth it. It's not worth your time.
No, I generally don't do that.
It's especially, I think, shady because he's not an inarticulate person, and so a lot of like the new like bigotry and these sorts of veiled insecure scapegoating, race baiting, all this crap.
I enjoyed a SyncBook chapter.
It's great. Of course it was good. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's like this new wave of sort of insecure racists. They're just really smart. And it's unfortunate because they know how to kind of argue and put forth arguments that seem like cogent. It's like taps into something common sense. It almost seems like common sense, certain things they say. But when you really pick them apart, they're so wrong. But that's what I find very disconcerting about it is it's sophisticated. It's more sophisticated than it's been in the past, and so that's like there's so many hot-headed people and people that are just pissed and they're easy to be manipulated. And
well,
so
that's what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. What are the plays, man? Everyone's being
well, sure, but I'm saying like as far as our community goes, if you want to talk about whatever truth, right, or whatever that fucking means, but in that sphere, yeah, it's polluting, whatever. But anyway, Alan, now that David has a secure connection, maybe you can bring up what you were.
Yeah, I don't have as much insecurities now, so I'm ready.
Your connection is stable, you as are you?
As am I, sir.
All right, so all right, I guess I'll say this one time is if you'll indulge me, I want to sort of tell you a quick story, all three of you, and then obviously get all three of your feedback. But David, I specifically want your input. I want to sort of toss it over to you first off, because not only are you as familiar as you are with the Tree of Life, but if I'm not mistaken, you are, is it a licensed massage therapist or physical therapist?
Yeah, I'm a massage therapist.
Okay, yep. Okay, cool. So, let me tell you guys my story as quickly as possible. Today, I've been working a lot of hours, and I've been really, like, my back's been really fucking bothering me, like, horribly, my back's been in pain. So Melissa kept saying, oh, you should go to a chiropractor, you should do something. I was like, I don't really don't want to do that, I don't whatever. So she knew somebody, whatever, who runs a massage place and said, hey, what if I booked you for a back massage? I said, okay, cool. So, I mean, I didn't actually say, okay, cool. I actually said, I don't know, I'm really awkward about people touching me, but she convinced me to go. I'm trying to make the conversation shorter, but actually it was not, I wasn't just like, sure. But anyway, so I go, and I had no idea, like, I don't know, like I said, I'm the awkward one, and I'm just like, okay, I don't know, whatever.
Have you not received a massage before in a professional setting?
Only once, kind of, and no. I'm a lot more awkward than you probably realize. So
I was just like, what is it? What does it make it count that you received a massage? It's like asking you if you've ever had sex. Ah, kind of.
No, okay.
I was just like, all
right. I actually this made it better. Is I once actually got a foot massage, which to me is probably even weirder. Whatever, I was with.
Hey, oh, I give you a foot massage, you know.
No. I went. Oh God, this is like, okay. I was with a now ex girlfriend of mine and her mother, and this was in downtown Flushing. This is like super like it's 99% Korean people living in this area as they were, and they were like, oh, we're gonna pop into this place, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm just walking in with them wherever they were, you know, we were just walking on the street, and like, oh, we're gonna hop in here, and then suddenly we're in like place to get foot massages, and I'm like, what is happening here? Like, and I was like, I don't know if I really want someone touching my feet, you know, whatever. And so I'm sitting in the chair. They finally convinced me, no, it's normal, it's completely normal. There's like this like old guy massaging my feet, and like, I was, for like the first 10 minutes, I'm like completely like awkward about it. And then finally I let myself like relax into it. I was like, okay, that actually feels pretty good. And then I got an erection and I was like, all right, this is weird again. You know?
Well, it's just like, you know, when you're petting a dog or whatever, you know?
So I was like, so now my wife's like, oh, I'll book you this massage. I'm like, oh my God, I can't, you know, I don't want to do this. But so like I said, this is the context of me going in. I said I'm not really comfortable with the whole thing, right? And all right, so I'm there, and she asks, okay, where's all your pain? I said most of my lower back and my neck and my calves, right? So okay, you know, she's like, do you want a full body massage? And I'm like, no, you know, I don't need that. Just, you know, okay, these three spots, right?
Right,
so, okay, so she lays me on my back, whatever, she starts on my lower back, and at first I'm just laying there, and I'm like, okay, it's a massage, it's fine, it's normal, it's whatever. And then at some point she works her way up to my right shoulder, and as I'm laying there, I start to think, I don't remember at what point I thought about it, but I was like, what sphere does this correspond to? The, you know, No. So I'm like, I'm saying, I'm laying there going, what sphere does this correspond to, this idea of the weighing the Tree of Life over the human body? And I was like, I wonder what this stress is that she's working on. I just had this thought, right? Uh-huh. And then I was like, and I was thinking, oh, you know, how some people say, you face into the trees, sometimes that you face out. And I was starting to, like, laying there, and I start to think about, oh, which way is right? And then I say, you know what? Fuck what anybody else says. I'm going to lay here, and I'm going to see what I can feel. What does this energetic feel like? As she's working my right shoulder, what does that bring up? As she works my left shoulder, what does that bring up? And I guess just the act of, like, deciding I was going to feel that, this massage turned into, like, an emotional roller coaster. Like, as all these crazy, like, things popped up, right? Like, shit's getting, like, memories and, like, old feelings. And as she would go around my body, it was, like, completely different. Like, it was just, like, changing a channel. Like, okay, now, you know, like, this was all, like, you know, bitterness and sorrow. And this is, you know, it's, like, you know, stress and, like, then, like, you know, really nice things. This one spot, you know, it was, like, sexuality. Like, I could feel the, like, strongly, emotionally feeling these things coming, like, welling up. That, like, I didn't cry, but there was 2 points during it that I was, like, I thought I might actually. It was, like, I felt, like, overwhelming sadness, like, or, you know, and there was another point where, like, overwhelming, like, bitterness. She was doing, like, my left shoulder at the end. Like, I was, like, oh, I could feel, like, all the, like, resentment that I've had. Like, just different, you know, like, different things that, like, so palatable emotions and states of awareness that, like, I was, like, all right, like, I need to get rid of this toxic shit. It's good. This is good. But it was just, like, but really unexpected, like, super unexpected. And I even mentioned it to her afterwards, and she was kind of like, yeah, you know, like, some people do the, like, spiritual energy work. I'm really just, like, a, you know, physical, you know, she's like, but that's really cool to hear. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, no, man, you don't understand what just happened to me.
Right. So, well, that's because it's from the inside out, not the outside. And it's not about what you're projecting onto it. It's about what it has to tell you, which is ideally what the thing is supposed to be about in the first place. So that's good. It's great.
Sounds very Reichian.
But I actually thought, yeah, I actually
Wilhelm Reichian, not third Reichian.
Yeah, no. Kyle Hunt is third Reichian. No, that's not what we're talking about. Yeah, and it's, you know, what's funny is even you think of, like, Reiki is what. So she was like, oh, I know, like, people do Reiki. You know, it's like,
yeah,
Reiki.
You know what? Come over to my yard. You can do some Reiki.
I just think it's funny the whole play on words here. But so I'm curious. You know, do you have anything else to, so yeah, I was actually think when she was doing my left calf, it was like, I was, when I was thinking about Wilhelm Reich, and I was like, okay. And I know, like, Will Morgan has talked about this idea of, like, that he would put his, like, repressed sexuality in his legs. And it was this idea of character arm. And I was like, okay, let's try and, like, just release all that shit. So whatever, it was, like, a really, like I said, it's not anything I expected how the whole experience to be or anything like that, but I'm sort of curious what your history with that or your thoughts on that are.
I got loads of history with that. I mean, that was just, you know, all the way through school, we would have, you know, different times. It was funny. There was one girl who had kind of scoffed during, this is so ironic, during, I don't know if it's appropriate to talk, but whatever, names aside, whatever, this was a long time ago. She had scoffed at the idea of bringing up emotion. They're talking about what we're going to have to deal with, and they're emphasizing this. They're like, you're going to be working with people, and people are going to have full-on, like, breakdowns, and how do you maneuver that, you know, like, how do you deal with that? And this girl, I was working on her stomach, like, you know, a month later. That was at the beginning. She just, could see it starting to come on, you know. And the stomach is a very vulnerable place, and we hold memory in our body. And so that's the idea. It's like we're, you know, we're a fractal. People come out of people. You have ancestral memory is the idea, and everything extends into it. But that's, you know. But yeah, she actually had to leave the room. She was embarrassed about crying because she's in a group setting, and there's people watching, you know. And she just started to feel all this stuff, but it was so ironic because I could see that the charge on the thing of like the dismissal of her relationship to showing emotion, and then the way when it came up, because it does come up, it inevitably comes up. I've had it come up many, many, many times. Yeah, it's. Yeah, that's the idea. It's your body. Your body's the thing. It's an energy. It's all about, like in Vipassana, you're literally trying, the whole entire focus of Vipassana is just to bring attention into the sensation. And the sensation can tell you everything. Like, we don't give sensation enough credit, you know, like bringing awareness into your body is first and foremost, yeah, for anything you want to put on top of it.
Like, my limited experience with it, it's, I feel like a lot of cool sensations running through my body. And I don't know what you had coursing through you, Alan, as far as physically what you were feeling. But anyway, I had correlated my emotional states to these physiological states. And so I've been like, oh, maybe there's something organic or Reikian going on. And recently I just read a book where it was a lot about the mind-body connection and physiology and consciousness and how those two things align and what your physiology is capable of and how your mind can influence that and all these things. But anyway, she gets into these things like super cooled water coursing through certain channels in your body that have the capacity to do that. And if your mind in certain states has the ability to kind of reorient your physiology to get these channels in your body to open up in different ways, you're almost unlocking your memories that are stored in that way. That, again, it's not just a purely physical explanation, so I'm not saying that, but there's
no,
always
that's
these
why
correlates.
When you said you were talking, yeah, that's what I'm saying, like, it seemed like to touch on what you were saying earlier, the intersection of physicality and, you know, like, so like she was saying, the woman who did the massage was sort of saying like, well, I don't really do that spiritual stuff, but you know, and I was sort of like, I don't know even if I'd, like, it was funny because I didn't use that word. I was just like, it wasn't necessarily spiritual. It was very much like cellular memory, like it's like, you know, very visceral memories mm-hmm. being unlocked and also emotional states. And so, like, I, you know, it's funny to me that that's even, we throw that in the spiritual when it's more like it's like a, I guess it's metaphysical, maybe, or you know.
Well,
whatever.
In terms of emanation, everything's still, even the metaphysical is still physical. It's just the physicality extended on a different level, you know.
Exactly.
It's a continuum. But like, absolutely, dude. You're not alone in that. Most people who receive massages know exactly what you're talking about. That's like a very common experience, actually. And, you know, you just happen to be acknowledging a map of the energy body. Because that's essentially, you know, what the Tree of Life is meant to be, as far as I can tell. And the way that things come into form. And so you yourself are a form. And so you're, you know, memory is an extension, but the past is alive in you. It's not like, you know, not like all there is to the past is like a memory in your mind. You hold memory in your body all over the place. And so if you're working on that and you're moving it around, you're allowing it to adjust, you're literally changing the past. I've tripped out on that just in terms of like, I look at, you know, the principles of psychotherapy to change the past and what that implies. I relate it to Joe's work. I relate it to
like time travel, Back to the Future.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
If I listen to Alejandro sure. Jodorowsky, especially talk about his relationship with psychotherapy and metagenealogy, I totally see Back to the Future, man. And it's his family. That was the whole thing with Back to the Future. He's going back to his dad. His dad's his age. So it's that same principle. The whole thing is, you know, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And like, wow, you know, to see like the break is essentially the breakup of the family. Right, it's like who doesn't wish they could go and mend the rifts of the past,
right?
You know,
I see it also as like reconciling the temple, all kinds of things, the symbolism sure, of yeah. the destruction of the clock tower, and how to go back in time because we're going around the loop again. It's like, can we change the past by changing the present? You know, yep, it's true.
It's cool. It makes me also think about like Prometheus Rising by Robert Anton Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Where he goes, you know, really deep into looking at
the nervous system and how, you know, our kind of chakras or energy centers or different minds in our body are always at work receiving imprints, you know. You know, from the school of mysticism, that's kind of like scientific talk for what might even be called like the creation or the congealing of the soul. You know, like it said that if spirit is the animating force, and the world that we incarnate into in our bodies and our dharma, they give the format for the spirit to create the soul, you know? So, like in our life, we're constantly creating the soul in the way that our consciousness is interacting with our physicality and with our environment. And we're forming this soul throughout our whole lifetime. And, you know, there's so many different parts of the soul to embody. And, you know, that's why these things like the tarot and the tree of life are really helpful to help one construct a kind of navigable reflection of the soul to work with and stuff. But in any sense, I think the interesting thing about things like energy work and even massage therapy and memory being trapped in the body and stuff is that it kind of like it runs in line with the kind of like the principles of the mystical schools, really from the East and other, you know, mystical traditions where, you know, essentially the idea is to, you know, live this life in embody this physicality, but to also have no attachment at the end of this life to that body or that ego or that identity, so that the spirit, the actual transcendent selfhood, can potentially actually bring the soul and the quality of that soul onto the next vessel. You know, like that's really the ultimate work of, you know, a lot of the yogic traditions, and even Crowley has, you know, spoken about how allowing the mind and the emotions to disconnect from the body at death, allow the spirit to freely incarnate in another form, you know.
Right. So I think it's, right.
Right. Yeah, that too. And so, you know, it's something I think that's really interesting to think about is that, you know, that if that is what's going on, our bodies and our spirit or, you know, our consciousness are constantly interacting and, you know, creating this self in this form, you know, there are things like massage therapy and like other practices that can help us to, not carry so much, you know, weight in this lifetime, you know, and like, and then that comes to that concept of identifying with materiality or, being kind of limited to that worldview, is that, you know, different methods can help us loose from that, the stronghold of, you know, materialism or, you know, I don't know, the divisions of form reality and stuff. So yeah, I think it's interesting. I think like there's something definitely spiritual about it, you know, about that kind of work and that kind of stuff, but it can, you know, have just as much of a scientific parallel, you know. That's what I'm kind
of
getting
it's
at.
So like, yeah, it's sort of hitting all those nodes at once, right? Because clearly, like, you know, she's asking, like, well, does your, you know, like her and my wife, when it's done, you know, they're like, well, you know, does your back feel better in like a pain sort of way? And I'm almost sort of like, yeah, sure, but that's not what I'm impressed, you know, that's not what I'm more focused on right now. But in the sense of like, so yes, it's clearly doing the physical good. It's doing, it's doing some sort of psycho-spiritual, psychoanalytic good. You know, it's basically doing all these different things at once, right? So when it's one of the reasons why I've sort of pushed over the last few years for the conversation to say, like, you need, you know, people talk about like this transcendent or conceptualized or transcendent spirituality is almost like in rejection of the physicality. So Kevin, you're saying like to not have attachment to the body, but it, you know, we of course try our damnedest and probably sloppily so to balance out the distinction of, you know, treat your body right or respect the body and its value to you without having like an egoic attachment to it at the end. Or, you know, how do you find that balance too?
Mm. Yeah, I think it's definitely like it's for me, just in my perspective of materiality and stuff, I came from certainly like a period of resenting civilization and science and all these materialistic realms of existence, and now I've come around and accepted them and seen their value in all different kinds of ways. So yeah, I think it's definitely not ever about denying our body or even denying our ego. You know, like we're gonna, I think, naturally give form to self concepts and constructs that are not only like natural, but they serve our, you know, our social reality, and then we put them to bed and we become ourselves to ourselves and all those other kind of things. So I think it's important even to like let go of ego death trip mentalities and stuff like that too, and just, you know, accept the fact that we're in form and make the best out of it. And I mean, for me, it's like I ultimately realize also what, you know, David was mentioning is just when you really boil everything down, I mean, when you really zoom out, there's no division in anything. Like you can't, there's no such thing as organic and inorganic. There's no such thing as even human beings on a planet, you know, because like even those are just thought form divisions of something that has its being on a larger scale outside of our human perception, you know. So I think when you really zoom out, the whole division of spiritual and material is just totally out the door almost, you know, like those two things are one in the same, and they stand in like seemingly duality, but they're not, because this is an interesting formula that Crowley put forth, is that, you know, 0 = 2. It's only through acknowledging duality, or through even being immersed in some sense of duality, that we can realize the undifferentiated unity or even nothingness. You know, like before conceiving of oneness, there is nothingness, like undifferentiatedness, you know. So 0 = 2, like it's only through duality perception that we can behold the zero sum of all things from without at the same time. I don't know, but yeah, it's definitely to me like there's really no division, you know, in the longest run. But then there's the practical way to kind of play the game, I guess, you know. You know, accepting physicality, and then also accepting that something transcendent is there as well, you know. Zen, I think that's an interesting thing that we see in the world too, is like, you know, the whole split between you know, God and the devil. It's really just like I can see just like consciousness coming to grip with the fact that it's taken on an animal form almost, you know. It's like the devil and all the earthly things that the devil and Satan and what, you know, the major religions consider evil is like all this carnal bodily stuff, and the devil is embodied by the, you know, the god of the woods, Pan. So that archetype becomes demonized, you know. And it was like, I see that whole time period of God versus Satan as this kind of
it's just the people
psychic. Yeah, exactly. It's like
it's
a psychic,
like, I mean, pagan projection. Literally means civilian. I mean, the right. Etymology of the actual, you know, like the way that word was used. When we say paganism, we're like, oh, the pagans, but that was like, you know, a villager. That's so weird. It's right. Like, you mean everybody? It's like terrorist. It's all like, oh, you mean fucking, I mean, what constitutes terrorism? Oh, you feel you don't trust your government completely, or, you know, conspiracy theorist. It's weird.
Well, if it's war on terror, right? Remember George Bush, war on terror? aka War on Earth, right? So if you're a terrorist, what is it? Right. Earthling?
He ate a lot of terror, Rocky. He had a terrier, pretty sure. George Bush.
But you brought up Prometheus Rising earlier, Kevin, too, and when I look at mystery traditions or any spiritual tradition, it says, okay, we're trying to transcend the body, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've come around to hearing body and seeing body as just a metaphor for what we consider those bodily instincts, I guess, so, or mindless automatisms. So we're both part robot and part spirit. So it's like, what do you give yourself over to mostly? And so if it's just unthinking reflexes, which is much of what we are, unfortunately, and so that's why you see the world the way it is, because no one transcends their lower circuitry or their lower baser things. They're always territorial or always looking for attention or something that drives pathology. And so any kind of spiritual practice is just to reframe all those pursuits and not necessarily get rid of them, but to like transform them and to reorient them. Because it's like, I don't know, the instinct to build civilization or community and so on is normal. It satiates survival needs, but it also facilitates all kinds of other like higher explorations of what it means to be human too. So by getting into these transcendental realms, it's not to escape, it's to like, it's the hero's journey premise of you're bringing back something to help other people.
Right, or you're bringing back gold and it turns to dirt, or vice versa, and you get to the other side. That was one of the classic stories that Joseph Campbell liked to talk about. Like El Dorado, you know.
Oh, you're doing Revolution 9? El Dorado.
Once I was trying to do Revolution number 9, and I was simultaneously thinking about ELO, El Dorado, with the Dorothy shoes on the front. As well as thinking about the, you know, with the fucking, the Ruby Slippers, the Electric Light Orchestra album where the witch's hands are all, you know, that's El Dorado.
Okay. And ELO is like ELO?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. There's a
another yellow brick in the wall, sorry.
A fairy tale. I know you're saying Joseph Campbell, so it's, you know, you could sort of lump, this is just one example, but there's a story called The Bluebird of Happiness, which is funny to me because in Yellow Submarine, he says at the end, actually, my cousin is the Bluebird of Happiness.
Rosie knows.
Right. But there's a in this fairy tale, this bluebird fairy tale, these kids are sent to go bring back this lost bluebird of happiness, and when they think they find the bluebird, and I think it's like in the land, they go to the land of the dead or something, and they find the bluebird, and when they bring it back, it's just like a pigeon or something.
Same principle.
Yeah. It's like
that was the thing with like, okay, so you got obviously Project Bluebird is the original name of MK Ultra, which is the obvious thing. But I was just thinking about the bluebird earlier today because I uploaded my Elton John's Yellow Brick Road with The Wiz again on Google Plus. And he says, you're a bluebird on a telegraph line, I hope you're happy now. In the song Funeral for a Friend, Love Lies Bleeding in My Hands, which plays the second time around when they go to the Two Towers, and it's all super ritualistic and crazy. But anyways, if you look at the front cover of that, when you see the image, so it's like he's in the slums, you can see the, you know, the industry and all the shit stepping into the poster of the Yellow Brick Road, right? And there's a on there, the bluebird shows up again inside the album, but you know, Dorothy says, if tiny little bluebirds fly over the rainbow, why can't I? We relate that to the Tree of Life, as you've pointed out a lot on your blog, Kevin, where you talk about the rainbow bridge and that whole premise and the bluebird relating to that. I love that she gets hit with a window pane. That's so ironic because that's what they called the acid that people took at that time when the film The Wizard of Oz came out. But anyways, it shows up in weird places. It showed up in, Big Bird, Sesame Street, the Big Bird movie, when he's the blue bird of happiness and he's held in a cage and it's all fucking weird. What was the thing too? I can't remember all the bluebird references. It shows up in the movie 9, which is funny because it's Revolution Number 9, but you guys have seen that movie probably, right?
Sinking is that as fuck. The CGI, like Jennifer Connelly, yeah. Little sock puppet?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and J.C. Reilly. And Jake Kotza has this great video where he incorporates that movie, but he shows the scene where they play Somewhere Over the Rainbow in the movie 9, and this crazy giant eye thing shows up in his film. Jake Kotza, he was relating it. I hope I'm getting that name right for the millionth fucking time. Kotza? Alan?
You say Kotza, I say, I don't
know. I say Kotza, all right, whatever. He makes a, he's referencing that, and he has this whole thing around, what is it, the Will Ferrell one, Jupiter.
The red eye, I think it's the red eye and blue eye.
It's not that one, it's another one. I can't remember. Fuck. Anyways.
But that movie is pretty damn interesting, I have to say. Like,
yeah, it's... but the moment that crazy eye thing shows up that he's equating with Jupiter and it looks like Howl or whatever and it's this creature and they play that song is right when they say bluebirds fly. So if you're watching that movie and they play that record, it goes bluebirds flying and this crazy fucking monster shows up, and it's weird for anybody who's looking at bluebirds fly and being like, wait a minute, really? Project Bluebird? You know, Wizard of Oz? Give me a break, you know, kind of thing. But anyway. Yeah. Just wanted to put that out there. It's also on every fucking school bus.
Yeah. Right.
Bluebird school buses, which makes it extra freaky. They're after your children! Sorry.
Yeah, I think that definitely that bird is a really interesting thing too, because when you think of like the archetype of like the birds of paradise, and you know, when you think about the whole rainbow bridge going over the rainbow concept, the idea of the rainbow as a, you know, a symbol for, you know, entering into the deeper realms of like the astral plane or the higher cosmic, you know, planes of existence and stuff. The birds are, you know, often associated with like the paradisical side or like heaven and stuff. And when you go to the star tarot card, there's like a bird of, you know, a bird of paradise kind of bird perched on the tree.
That was what was being referenced in the Led Zeppelin song Stairway to Heaven, when he's like, in a tree by a brook, there's a songbird who sings. I always visualize the bird in the right in that card.
Right. Yeah, there's also a really great poem. I think it might be Merwin. I'm not sure. I'd have to get back on it, but it's. I think it's called "The Palm Tree at the End of the Mind." This is some of the.
Yeah.
It's a great poem. It's some of the like mythology that is kind of like built into the record that my band is working on right now. There's a song at the end of the record. There's kind of this Philip K. Dick theme. The last song is called Between the Black Iron Prison and the Palm Tree Garden. And those are two like metaphors that Philip K. Dick, you know, kind of broke reality up into often. And there's this perfect poem by Merwin that talks about this like flaming phoenix bird that resides at the palm tree at the edge of the mind. And what I think is really fascinating is if you think about the star tarot card going from Chokmah to Tifereth, then that crosses from the Ruach to the Neshama, you know? And mm-hmm. So the birds of paradise and that exist, you know, in this cosmic heavenly realm above the abyss or whatever, when you think about the palm tree at the end of the mind with this bird perched in it, and you place the star tarot card in context there, it's to me, there's like, I don't know, it's like this trippy Kabbalistic metaphor of that path, you know, that crosses from the Ruach to the Neshama, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's just the talk of the birds just sparked that kind of felt like.
I was relating KPAX as an abbreviation of Nock's own PAX.
So, right. You know, yeah, that, yeah.
That's Crowley's I Ching book. And I in that film, you know, there's this whole crazy scene, the bluebird hysteria scene, with the guy starts shouting "fucking bluebird" because they told him to look for the bluebird of happiness. And then he sees the bluebird, but he's in an institution. Like, he's an older guy, like, he's like a perfect, like, primed, you know, suspect for MKUltra experimentation, turning someone fucking over the deep end and then tossing him into a place like this. And so for him to be freaking out shouting bluebird, it seems like such the fucking CIA joke, you know?
Right, right.
Well, and then, but then in the context of Nock's own PAX, it just adds it to this whole other level, you know, in terms of, you know, British intelligence and stuff.
That's so funny. You say that too, because I've been having these bird syncs for the past couple days, and I didn't realize that also Jake Kotze had changed his Instagram name to Chicken, and it confused me when I first saw it. And then all these bird syncs came up, and I'm definitely getting these like metaphors of this, you know, spring and like wake up and spring chickens, and then like,
what are you, McFly chicken?
Right. And then, yeah, and then, like, you know, Big Bird was in the news yesterday. I guess he almost got to, like, take some trip to space or something like that. And and so, yeah, there's a Big Bird movie coming out. Wow. Yeah, I didn't quite get to read the article, but I was thinking out on it. And the crazy thing is that because I was picking up on these wake-up roosters and birds and spring chicken sinks or whatever, I put Kongso and Pax in the... this little collage that I put on Instagram yesterday. So it's really cool that. Conks? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Conk's own PAX, right? K O N X. I really don't know the pronunciation. I'm just going with the, you know, assumption. But yeah, it's so cool that you mentioned that right after we acknowledged these bird sinks. It's like really interesting.
Yeah. What was it? Oh yeah, there was why did I was I tripping out on this? But Ben Barrett. As a kid in the movie Follow That Bird, and his name is Floyd, and I thought it was so funny that there was a Barrett named Floyd,
right?
And the thing, because I equate this whole trip with where was the acid that people like them were taking, or if it was coming from Tavistock, has this whole thing. So there's this weird deal when he's like, you know, they make him the bluebird of happiness, and at one point. Doesn't he fucking jump onto a Volkswagen Beetle as the bluebird of happiness? As a big, giant blue bird, big bird? Oh, man. Sorry. Have you guys ever seen Follow That Bird?
No.
That's some sync homework, man.
I'll have to check it out. I'm sure that's... I should probably watch it tonight with all these bird syncs.
Yeah, well, you know,
I'm totally down for watching any Muppet Sinky thing. I actually rewatched the Muppet Frog Prince the other night.
Oh, I didn't even know that existed. That sounds really cool.
It's a total classic.
The
we talked about this on the show a long time ago.
Did we? Yeah.
Yeah.
Bake the hole in the candle of her brain. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been a while, but that was the thing at the end with her cane, that she's got the end of her cane, yeah, or
the,
whatever.
The girl in the thing is like, she
has a speech impediment?
She actually has a curse placed upon her that she has to speak that way, that she reverses like syllables each word in the sentence. So throughout the thing, the whole movie, she's talking really weird in this sort of like variation on Pig Latin, and then she's trying to tell the frog, bake the hole in the candle of her brain. And finally he realizes it's break the ball in the
handle of her cane.
Yes, yeah. And that breaks the spell.
Right. Classic. Okay, yeah. Fucking Big Bird jumps out of a cage as a bluebird. as the Bluebird of Happiness and leaps onto a yellow Volkswagen Beetle. sorry. I was just having this whole trip because I was
thinking
the Beetle on the moon card, and then you have the Beetle, like, you know, symbol of the sun, VVV, right? Vav, 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 the sun, the Beetle, equated, but it's like, I don't know, for the Bluebird to be joking. Oh man, that's
amazing. Yeah. I mean, and you think about that, the Merkaba is the, you know, the method of transport between here and the heavenly realm of bluebirds and such, you know, that those archetypes interact is makes total sense, you know.
Right. And then also just in terms of the 60s, you have something that was being, the bluebird jumps from the prison. So if you're like, oh, the CIA, MK Ultra experimentation in the fucking closet, and then it's all, oh, the fucking 60s movement car that happens to be the image of the scarab, which happens to be the image of the soul, you know, the whole deal, you know, the going to the sun road business, all of that. And then it's like, but it's like taking that to the, you dig what I'm saying? It's just funny. Yeah.
That's great. Found a picture of it. I just dropped it right here.
Wow. That is hilarious. I'd love to see, is there a license plate on that we should figure out what's going on there?
We need to get to the bottom of this one. Yeah, no, I did a blog on it. Maybe we can include it in the links. I show a bunch of stuff from Follow That Bird and all these different things. Yeah. Went way into yellow submarine, Follow That Bird. Yeah.
If you drop if you share the link either in the Skype chat or Facebook, we'll
cool
include it for sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw that poem in there too.
Oh man,
happiness. So he sings one little star.
One little star. Why did you say that?
It says. One little star is the song the bird sings.
I can't find your image. Is that what you're talking about?
I just Googled Follow That Bird. I'm just looking up.
Oh.
But apparently the song that he sings is called One Little Star.
Oh, right. Because I went
so
off
on it. So you were talking
about
the star card, and he's saying One Little Star.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I have it here. One little star reaching far through the night. Do you shine on my someone? Are you sharing your light? Oh, one little star, shine on us both tonight. And then under that I wrote, he dreamed of a big star. He played a mean guitar. I'm looking at my blog. But I was equating it with, I think, Venus. I have this whole thing around Venus in this. I was tripping out on the, oh, yeah, because of the, Not Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the fucking other rainbow song. Why are there so many songs about rainbows? Even though there's only one song about rainbows. Why does Kermit the Frog at the beginning of the Muppet movie say, why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side? There's only one song that I can think of about what's on the other side of a rainbow. Sorry, just... That is the most Luciferian song I've ever heard in my life. It's the fucking rainbow connection.
Right.
It's great. It's a great song. When Wished on the Morning Star.
Oh, does he say that in there?
Yeah, he says, who said that every wish would be heard and answered when wished on the morning star? Well, somebody thought of that, and someone believed it, and look what it's done so far. And what's interesting about that, too, as far as, like, you know, Mark LeClaire's whole emphasis on Kubrick's obsession with Pinocchio, which is actually totally legitimate, and I totally see it, and it tripped me out after he said that, but... got me thinking. I'm like, dude, totally. The guy is fucking obsessed with Pinocchio. But that's the thing, is that he wishes on the star in order for the boy to become human. And so you have an automaton or whatever, and then he's imbued with life. So he's like, it's like the story of the Gollum too, essentially. I mean, it's a Gollumistic story, which has this huge application.
I assume you're connecting the blue fairy and the bluebird.
Absolutely. What is Blue Fairy? Robin Williams says that, by the way, as Ask Dr. No or whatever it is. You don't remember what I'm talking about?
So you're talking about in the movie AI.
In the AI, it's Robin Williams who says to go to Blue Fairy. Yes.
Oh,
what is Blue Fairy?
Oh, wow. Okay. And of course, he's with Tinkerbell and Hook.
Right, right, right. There you go. Yeah. That's funny. Oh, yeah. No, we could go. Yeah. After that show last time, it was like thing after thing kept on coming up with Robin Williams. I'm just like, oh, duh, dude. He's Jack, you know? It's strange.
So is Patrick actually here with us?
That would be cool.
I'm here.
Oh wow, look at that. Holy shit. We got the band back together.
Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Kevin. Now Zeus was a womanizer, always on the make. But Hera usually punished her that Zeus was one to take when you sleep.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast from the SyncBook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune in to our other SyncBook Radio programs, 42 Minutes, Always Record, the Marty Leeds Math Magical Radio Hour, Synchronize, Pentimental, and Sync Quick News. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.
Pulling out weeds from the dusty soil, but then never rewarded with the fruits of their toil. Are they scratching their nails on the chalkboards of death, only seeking attention when everyone in the room has left? Where do your fingers go
when you sleep?
What do your fingers know? What do your fingers show
when you sleep?
Where do your fingers go? When you sleep, do they tremble on the edge of the bed, or do you fold them neatly by your head?